The Digital Lifestyle presents TO Mobile, show number 95, Friday, November 18th, 2011. I'm Jose Ortiz, and I'm going to give you fair warning right now. It might be a bit of a monotone and boring show. Unfortunately, Sheldon, Jason, and John were all busy this week, so they weren't able to get together, but there's so much going on this week in terms of news and just devices being released and available that just felt compelled to put a show out there, and we've been pretty consistent over the past few weeks, so hopefully you can join me in my monologue and as I try to get through this and not feel awkward as I basically talk to myself. But we do have a lot of news to cover, so I'm going to get right into it. And as an ode to Jace, who couldn't make it to the show, I'm going to actually kick it off with Windows Phone news. And the HD7, the HTC HD7, apparently getting an update that finally enables internet sharing on the device. I haven't updated my own yet, but I know that Ian tweeted about it, and I believe John did as well, saying that it seems to work perfectly fine. So once you apply the update, it goes ahead and allows internet sharing on the HD7, which basically lets you use your device as a MiFi or a hotspot, a wireless hotspot. Along with the HD7, it looks like the HTC Mozart also got the same update. So if you haven't already done so and you have either the HD7 or the Mozart, go ahead and apply that update. I'm going to go ahead and update mine in the next couple days as well and try that feature out, see how well it works on the HD7. Along with the HD7 and other Windows Phone news, the Lumia 800 is finally shipping in the UK, or is finally available for the general public. And Nokia Conversations has posted a nice little, what they're calling a photo story. And it's just a series of pictures that takes you through the Nokia factory and showing hundreds and thousands of Lumia 800s being prepared for shipment. It's pretty cool. It really takes you from kind of the testing of the hardware of the Lumia 800, making sure that it boots up properly, making sure everything's in place. It's packed. What they call the inboxing rather than an unboxing. Actually pretty cool to see them packaging all this stuff up, and all the way to where they get loaded onto pallets and onto the trucks at the docks for distribution. So pretty cool little full story. We'll have the link in the show notes so you can check it out. And so far, the reception of the Lumia 800 has been positive. In fact, again, Nokia Conversations actually noted that it did get an editor's award as best phone. I mean, myself, I'm a little skeptical about that. It hasn't really been out for more than a few days and already getting the best phone award of the year. And I know there's plenty of people who would make an argument otherwise, but it did get an editor's award from a publication. I actually can't find the name of the publication right now, but got an award. So that's good news for them. Hopefully we'll see more hardware, and specifically here in the U.S., hit the public soon. Moving on to some iOS news. The unlocked iPhone 4S is now available in the U.S., contract free. So of course it's not going to be subsidized. It's going to be a little pricier. Varies between $650 or $649 to $849, depending on the size. Obviously $649 being at the low end for the 16 gig model. But for anybody like myself that's wants to pick up an iPhone 4S without being locked down and off contract, and especially those that maybe travel a lot and want to use their device outside of whatever region they're currently in, this would be a good option, albeit a pricey one, but the option is there. In other iOS news, the Gmail app is back. So you may recall that we had talked about the Gmail app finally hitting iOS, but apparently it had some type of bug every time it refreshed, every time it it went out and retrieved data, specifically with the push functionality. But it looks like it's back in the store with those bug fixes. The app itself still doesn't look that great to me. I mean, it's nice because you're able to still keep it within the conversation view that you might be used to if you're familiar with the Gmail app on Android or even the web interface, how the threaded conversations stay together and they're very well organized. But essentially, it looks like it's just a shell. It works just as well as my shortcut on my iPad does to just the Gmail website, the mobile Gmail website. Nothing too crazy here. It'd be nice to see them maybe add a little more flash, run a little smoother. But the app is there nonetheless. So any of you Gmail users that have been waiting for a native Gmail app, you can go out and grab it now. It's out in the Apple App Store. And I think that's about it for iOS news. Android was really the big news this week, with couple of devices being released and a pretty big announcement. But before I get into those, just want to cover a couple smaller stories. I mean, I'm not sure how small this is, but Panasonic apparently is ready to expand beyond just its a Japan market. Panasonic does manufacture and sell phones in Japan, but it looks like it wants to broaden its scope and push into the UK along with a couple of the countries in Europe. So we'll see where that leads. Just a couple of devices that they produce right now for Japan are the P07C, which apparently is a 4.3 inch touchscreen device with Android. These are all Android devices, as well as the Lumix 101P, which is a waterproof device with a 13.2 megapixel camera, which is pretty crazy. I mean, we know Nokia is known for their great mobile cameras, but 13.2 megapixels, that's a pretty high pixel count. Now, can't really say that just because it has a high pixel count, it's gonna generate great images, but it's a start. So in next year we might start seeing these devices hit the UK market, and we'll see how they do. Moving on to a rumored device that looks pretty appealing, the HTC Zeta. Supposedly, it's going to have a 2.5 gigahertz quad core CPU, and ice cream sandwich. Now, this is just a concept. It's not an actual device that is being developed. But I mean, if you listened to the show before, you heard Sheldon saying that he wants his dual core CPUs, even if it's not going to make a difference. Well, pretty soon he's going to start demanding his quad core CPUs. Because we know that even though it's just a concept, these things are never too far from the truth, no matter how far-fetched they may seem. But looks like a pretty crazy device if it does end up being developed. 1080p video capture, 1.3 megapixel front-facing camera, pretty nice specs. At this point, it's rumored to just be a concept, but it's a nice concept to dream up nonetheless. A device that isn't really a concept and should be out pretty soon, according to this post over on Slashgear, is a Lenovo tablet running Ice Cream Sandwich, based on the Tegra 3 platform, and apparently it's going to be ready for launch by the end of this year. And really, we don't have much time left between now and the end of the year, maybe about 6 7 weeks. But it's supposedly going to be running on 2 gigs of RAM on 1.6 gigahertz Tegra 3 quad core chip, with nice little camera. It has a fingerprint reader on the back, which, aside from just being used as a fingerprint reader, apparently can be used as a joystick or a scroll wheel for navigation. So we'll see. We won't have to wait long to see if this rumor pans out or not. Now, one of the big devices that was released this week, in addition to the Lumia 800, was the Samsung Galaxy Nexus. So, in the UK, I believe Phones for You got the exclusive, but they're out there now. You lucky guys over in the UK get to purchase it if you like it. And based on the reviews that various websites have been putting up, even the most critical users are really, really liking this device. Everything from the hardware design, which I was personally disappointed at when they unveiled the actual devices, but again, I haven't actually had a hands-on, so that may change once I get my hands on it. But the hardware and design is getting a lot of praise. The display, which was a big, people were very critical about the fact that it was a Pentile display. Apparently, because of the high resolution, this is a 720 P display. Because of the high resolution, it's quite crisp, despite the fact that it's a Pentile display. It is a Super AMOLED display, which we assume that is used in order to manage battery life and really extend the battery life versus a traditional LCD display. So the display apparently is a non-issue after all that speculation. The camera apparently could be better. It is better than what we have seen out there for Android so far, but at 5 megapixels, apparently, there are a couple issues with it where they feel that maybe the iPhone 4S camera is still a bit better. And of course, the big news on the Samsung Galaxy Nexus is Ice Cream Sandwich itself, with this whole new kind of fluid design, minimalism. There was the new font creator, Roboto, which itself has apparently been getting a lot of criticism. Redesigned Gmail app, redesigned phone dialer, and apparently everything is doing pretty well. Getting a lot of favorable reviews, a lot of positive feedback, with very few things to nitpick at. So, you lucky folks over in the UK, you can pick one up now. Us Yanks need to wait a bit, even for importers to get them. So I'm sure it won't be long, maybe another week or two before your favorite importer will get a hold of one of these, and you can get one SIM free. And if you are waiting for the Verizon version in the US for the CDMA version of the Galaxy Nexus, that supposedly should be out sooner rather than later, maybe around the first week of December. So Galaxy Nexus, I know I'm definitely going to be picking one up. I cannot wait to get my hands on it, especially after reading the reviews and seeing how positive people are about the device. Now, one thing that Ice Cream Sandwich apparently does not have, or at least does not come on board on the Galaxy Nexus, is visual voicemail. So Google did present visual voicemail at the Hong Kong event a few weeks ago when they introduced and showed off the Galaxy Nexus along with Ice Cream Sandwich. However, on the Galaxy Nexus, the actual retail device does not have visual voicemail for some reason. According to Google, the reason is that the APIs are there, so you can take advantage of the APIs, but it's still going to require a third party to enable that. Specifically, they mention carriers. So, carriers probably have to do something to enable that visual voicemail to connect to and talk to the servers that the carriers have in order for that to work. Speculation is that Verizon's edition of the Galaxy Nexus will in fact have visual voicemail, so I think we'll find that out pretty soon. But the APIs are there, so if somebody like HTC, for example, decides to take advantage of those APIs, I could definitely see a company like HTC, which is known for their Sense UI and for customizing and skinning Android, to take advantage of those APIs and maybe create and deliver a custom visual voicemail solution. So we'll see about that. And some other what I consider related news is that Google Checkout is going to be folded into Google Wallet. So Google Checkout has been kind of the merchant slash consumer service that Google has owned and developed for quite some time now, where you can make purchases on the web using Google Checkout instead of whatever website's own credit card processing piece. And you have your history through Google, and nice little way to pay and have your payment information stored as well. Google Wallet was rolled out to take advantage of the NFC capabilities within Android, and the whole swipe to pay thing. You can just swipe your cell phone and it pays instead of taking out your credit card or whatever. It just offers a nice little convenient way to pay for goods and services when you're out and about. Well, it looks like they're being basically mushed together. Checkout is becoming part of Google Wallet. And everything should be transitioned automatically. So if you have any payment information, any cards, any history from Google Checkout, it will be automatically transitioned into Google Wallet. And to me, this makes a lot of sense, because now you'll be able to take advantage of Google Wallet and across the board. So you can use Google Wallet on the web, or you can use Google Wallet out in the physical world, tap to pay. And I think last week there was actually some news about, I believe it was Asus and I don't remember who else, basically building tap to pay, or really putting an NFC chip, an NFC sensor into the palm rests of some ultrabooks. So essentially you'll be able to tap to pay even on your laptop instead of entering all of your information. So that'd be pretty cool. So there's no, according to the communication that was sent out by Google to Google Checkout merchants, really no action is needed, and it's not until 2012 that we'll start seeing the transition happen for consumers, for users. Again, very similar. It's probably just gonna, if you go to Google Checkout, it's probably just gonna redirect you to Google Wallet. You see very minimal changes, but enhanced functionality. So look out for that. Another device that was released as this week was the Amazon Kindle Fire. Now a lot of people were really excited about the Fire, myself included, simply because it really tied into Amazon's ecosystem really well when it comes to purchasing content, music, video, books. And the 7-inch tablet was sold for only $200, which is by far the cheapest that we've seen across the board. Of course, excluding the Fire cell of the HP touchpad. But it was released this week. It actually was delivered a day early to those who pre-ordered. I actually pre-ordered one and got my hands on it. I did an unboxing, which I'll link to on the show notes. I posted it up on TDL as well. And also just a quick little summary of my first impressions, what I had gone through. And I'll just rehash them for you now. The tablet itself, it actually feels a lot heavier than I expected to, but it's nice. The soft touch back, it's easy to hold in the hand. I like the screen. I love the UI. It's extremely fluid. You just fly through it. It's a lot smoother than even the iPad, I would say. Tried it as an e-reader. I went out to eat and I took it with me. Tried reading and I immediately missed my Nook, just because the Nook is so much smaller, lighter, and definitely easier to read on the e-ink display. But since having it, I have had a chance to watch some video on it through Amazon's Prime service. And the video is pretty clean. I didn't notice any stuttering, any lagging at all. The screen is pretty bright, very vibrant, and the only thing is that the speakers are extremely low, very difficult to hear any audio. You definitely need some headphones, and like others have said, other reviewers have said, that power button is in a very odd location. Just taking the pictures that I did for the post, it gave me a shutdown prompt a few times, because I would set it on the table and it would push the button in and, think that I was either putting it to sleep or wanting to shut down. And other than that, though, I mean, it's pretty good. I'm still trying to get into the habit of using it instead of the iPad or the Sony Tablet S. I love the size, love the 7-inch form factor. But it's obvious. It was obvious to me that this is definitely going to be an around the house device rather than a take with me on travel device because of the lack of broadband connectivity. And I mean that's not much different than say the iPad or the Tablet S or any of the Samsung Galaxy 10.1 Tab 10.1. But the fact that it's a lot smaller, the fact that it's a 7-inch form factor. It makes me feel like I should be able to take it around with me. Whereas the iPad, it just seemed, it always seemed too big for me to just carry around. The Kindle Fire seems so much easier, especially considering the content that you have there, right? So you have your music, you have your books, and, you want to carry that around with you. So that was a bit disappointing, but at the same time, I wouldn't mind having it just around the house. And then the App Store, of course, is there, so you can search for apps in the Amazon App Store. I'll be doing some follow-up posts on this on the Kindle Fire once I spend some more time on it. I won't be doing a full review. There's plenty of reviews out there, but I will, just talk about my experience with it and how I get along with it. Honestly, at $200, it was difficult not to purchase just because it's so cheap with so much content on there. But yeah, check out the unboxing, my first impressions on the Digital Lifestyle blog. Speaking of the Amazon App Store, actually, Zinio is available on the Amazon App Store. For those of you that aren't aware, Zinio is really a magazine app. You have the app and you're able to subscribe to magazines through that rather than have to independently load them or sideload them or download them separately in separate apps. Zinio gives you essentially a bookshelf where you have your magazine subscriptions, you download them, you can review them digitally. No big surprise considering that they just released their app for the touchpad. So bringing it to the Kindle Fire and the Amazon App Store makes perfect sense, especially given that the Amazon Kindle Fire is really a content consuming device. So great to see that the Zinio app is going to be available there. And finally, the really big announcements for the week, Google Music. So Google Music was introduced a few months ago in beta form. You had to sign up for the beta. The concept was really cool, actually, similar to what Amazon did with their Cloud Player. You basically uploaded your songs to Google Music. It kind of happened in the background seamlessly, and then you have them available to stream on any Android device or even through a web browser. They even optimized it so that you can access it through your iPad and iPhone through the web browser, through Safari on there. And you can stream your content. You can actually cache it. So if there's certain songs that you want to make available offline, in case you don't have a connection at any given point, you can download them to your device, and you can listen to your music offline. And it was a very cool way to have everything synced without really having to, tether your device and have to sync with an actual software piece. It just kind of goes to the cloud, downloads it back to your phone, and makes it available on demand for you. Notable absence, of course, was how to get that content in the first place. So when you buy your music, where are you going to buy it from? There was no Android music store. Well, with this week's announcement, Google Music announced just that, really a store where you can purchase music. Really the big players at this point are EMI, Sony, and Universal, and a ton of indie labels, which offers a lot of music. There's still some notable absentees, such as Warner Music Group, but speculation is that they're still in talks in getting deals with those other labels to really bring the content available, the music available, up to par with a store like iTunes or even Amazon's MP3 store. So effective immediately, and this was on the 16th that the announcement was made, Google Music is no longer in beta form. So anybody can go out there and sign up. You don't need an invite from somebody that's already in the beta anymore. What's really cool is that they're going to integrate the Google Plus. So let's say you go out there, you purchase an album, you can actually share it to Google Plus and say, hey, look, I just bought this album from so-and-so artist, from Childish Gambino. And it goes a little further than that in the fact that anybody that's in your circle, any of your friends in Google Plus, are actually able to play every single track on the album that you bought or every song that you bought, full in its entirety, not little preview clips, not little, 90-second snippets. The song in its entirety, they're able to listen to it, you can expose your friends and really share your music with your friends. Now, this isn't an unlimited streaming service, so it's not like they're going to be able to constantly play it and really kind of leech off of your purchases. But it does allow them to play it once through. You have a friend who maybe it's on the fence about getting the latest Drake album. You buy it, you share it out to Google Plus. They get to listen to it in its entirety and decide whether or not they actually want to go ahead with the purchase or not. And it's just a really cool sharing tool. And if you happen to have a friend that starts purchasing a lot of music through Android, it might be worth it for you to add them to your Google Plus so you can, take advantage of that and listen to that music. So song sharing and social media and publishing is obviously a big thing here with music and the way it's being integrated with Google Plus. Google Music is also going to have exclusive content such as interviews. They're going to have concert tracks, so artist concerts will be recorded and made available via audio format. On the day of the announcements, artists such as Busta Rhymes and I believe Shakira, Coldplay, just different artists were making music available for free. There were concert singles, there were new singles, such was the case in Busta Rhymes, exclusives, remixes. So there's going to be a lot of exclusive content that you'll only be able to get through Google Music. In addition to that, kind of taking a page out of Amazon's book, they will be offering a free song of the day every day. So they started with the David Bowie track, just because it went along with what they were announcing. But every day there's going to be a new song, different genres, different artists. There should be something for everyone as time goes on. And again, this will be a great way for people to discover new music. Just download the song for free and check it out. And who knows, you might discover your next new favorite artist. They also announced carrier billing through T-Mobile. So, T-Mobile has been a partner throughout the years with Google when it came to Android. In fact, T-Mobile was the first launch partner launching the G1, also known as the Dream, a few years ago, a couple of years ago. And now they're going to offer carrier billing for Google Music. So rather than have to charge your credit card immediately, you just download whatever song, whatever album you want to go through, and it comes on your monthly statement through T-Mobile. And of course, in addition to the Android market, being able to shop through music through the Android market on your phone, they also have the web component, so you can do music and artist discovery on the web. And along with that, there's an obvious support for a lot of independents here, independent artists, independent labels, and they're introducing what they're calling artist hubs. And essentially, it's a page that an artist manages. They can manage their music. They can publish their music on there, put their music up for sale. They can give it away for free if they want. They get to name their own price. They could get to, add their pictures, profile, tour dates. Really think of it like the way MySpace used to have, pages for bands and artists. That's really what this is, except that there's also an avenue for artists to sell their music and for people to easily find it, discover it, and consume it. The profit division is 70-30, very similar to other stores. If the artist page, the artist hub does not exist yet, so let's say you're a new artist, you want to go ahead and put your music up on Google Music, but you don't have a page yet, a page doesn't exist, you just go through similar to what Android developers go through and set up a profile and an account, and pay a $25 sign-up fee to sell their apps in the App Store, in the Android market, it'll be the same thing for artists. So artists will just pay a one-time $25 registration fee. They get to set up their page and, you know, have a pretty large reach through Google Music. So this really was the main piece that was missing from Android. You know, because obviously the iPhone had a big advantage. The way it kind of came through was obviously through sales on iTunes, and it had the App Store, so it had that content there. Obviously, iBooks ended up coming about, but it had that content there, and when people thought about buying MP3s, for the most part, I mean, the biggest chunk of that market went to iTunes, went to Apple. You know, with some of it maybe going to Amazon and you know, from there on out, the smaller players. And now, with this integration, Android is finally there. Not only is it introducing kind of this nice, fluid, very polished operating system with Ice Cream Sandwich, but now it's also going to have the content. It has Google Books. You have videos and movies that you can purchase through the Android market. And now music, which is a big piece, is part of that equation. So Google really has become this content provider, and I think it's really going to help it in terms of closing that gap that many people feel Android has with iOS. So it'll be exciting to see how all this rolls out, how Google affects this, and if Google, in fact, does end up taking up what chunk of digital sales Google ends up taking up. And hopefully they will release those figures as the service matures. But we'll see. All right. And before we end the show, did want to go over a quick email that we received from a listener from Russell Whitehead, who had a question regarding encrypted email on Exchange servers. So let me go ahead and read the email real quick. Guys, by way of quick introduction, I am a long-term listener of the TDL podcast and a more recent listener of the TDL mobile podcast. Ian suggested I drop you a line. My question revolves around S/MIME email encryption and the various mobile platforms. I work for a large company, and whilst the IT support is excellent, it is very much a separate function and behind closed doors. As it stands, the unwritten rule is that if you need to have email encryption, you need to have a BlackBerry. Other devices sync with their Exchange server, Android and iOS, not sure about Windows Phone 7, but you are unable to read or open the encrypted items as there appears to be no way of installing the required certificate upon the devices. The recent iOS 5 is meant to support S/MIME, but there appears to be no obvious way of getting the requisite certificate over to the iPhone. I wonder if you guys had any thoughts on or experience with this type of issue. Regards, Russell. Well, Russell, we did actually discuss it with the guys, with Jace, Sheldon, and John throughout the week. And I think between us, we were able to compile an answer for you. So Windows Phone 7 currently does not support S/MIME encryption at all, which is disappointing, especially given the fact that Windows Mobile was a business operating system, and that was its killer feature. I remember I loved Windows Mobile because it was the best integration with Exchange Server. I mean, you couldn't really get an Exchange server experience on another operating system, or similar to the way that it's difficult to replicate the Gmail experience on Android. It's kind of odd to see that Windows Phone doesn't support S/MIME encryption. So Windows Phone is kind of out of the question. When it comes to Android, unfortunately, because of the segmentation, because of all the skinning that these manufacturers do, there is no standard email app for Exchange synchronization for Exchange servers on Android. Gmail is the only standard stock app. From my experience, though, a lot of manufacturers, for example, HTC has their HTC Mail app, which does sync with Exchange. Sony Ericsson actually uses a third party, used to use a third party email app called Moxier Mail, which is pretty good. And then there's other third party apps such as DataViz's RoadSync or Touchdown, Exchange Touchdown, I believe it's called. Which do sync with Exchange, but they are external apps, so you're gonna have a separate calendar. In some cases, you have a separate contact list. You'll definitely have a separate app for your Exchange Mail. But some of these do offer S/MIME encryption. For example, Moxier Mail is one of the third-party apps which will offer encryption and will allow you to view and sync with encrypted servers. As far as getting the certificate on there, it's actually going to be up to your server administrator, because the server administrator can push that certificate out to you. In fact, when you set up your device, if S/MIME encryption is enabled, and you talk to the server, you know, you enter your server settings, your server name, your domain, username, password, yada, yada, yada. When it syncs to it and they talk to each other and when that handshake occurs, the server should be prompting you to install that certificate if it's set up correctly, if it's allowing you and you have the proper rights to. But that certificate should be pushed to you, at which point you either accept or decline the certificate. Obviously, you would have to accept it in order for it to work properly. And in fact, with that certificate, there could be rules applied as well. It might force you to create a lock code if you don't already have one on the device. So you will have to talk to your server administrator in some of those cases, but there are apps out there such as Moxier Mail that will support that encryption. It's just a matter of coordinating correctly. When it comes to iOS, iOS 5 will support S/MIME encryption, and you should be able to read it. But again, it's a matter of getting that certificate pushed to you. There is a tool for enterprise users called, give me a sec, I had it, let's see, oh, here it is. It's called the iPhone Configuration Utility, and they have it available for both Mac and Windows. And what it is you set up these profiles for your iPhone, and this is, you can actually find this at apple.com/support/iPhone/enterprise. But you're able to set up these profiles that you can then push to the iPhone to easily have them set up. So rather than you having to go through and fudge with the settings and enter all this data manually, you would actually set up a profile, including the certificate, including your username, your credentials, including server information, and you're then able to push this out to whatever iPhones you have on the network, however many iPhones you have in a network. Again, this is a push, so you wouldn't have to mess with the settings, and then you're able to obtain your Exchange email. You can go through it manually, but in order to get that certificate, the configuration utility is going to be your best and easiest way to get it. If you go to the website, to apple.com/support/iPhone/enterprise, it also has a section there specifically talking about Exchange Active Sync. So if you need help kind of navigating through that, depending on how your server is set up, you're saying that the IT area is kind of behind closed doors, if they're having issues, you might direct them to this reference information and see if they can get that active. But there are ways of getting S/MIME encrypted email onto your iOS and Android devices. Might not be easy, might not be the cleanest solution, specifically on Android, but it can definitely be done. So hopefully that helps you out. Thanks a lot for the email. It's nice getting email from listeners. And if any other listeners have any other advice for Russell, go ahead and write to us at mobile@thedigitallifestyle.com. All right, and I think that's gonna wrap it up for this week. So hopefully I didn't bore you to death with my voice this entire time. Hopefully next week we'll get everybody else back on the show. But again, with the news and stuff that was out this week, we just felt it was necessary to get something out there. So hopefully we're able to keep you informed. Don't forget, you can email us at mobile@thedigitallifestyle.com. You can also leave a comment on the post for this podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Jose R. Ortiz. Sheldon is at Sheldon W. You can follow John at John Dickinson. And Jace is at Database Jace. And of course, Ian is at IS Dixon. Don't forget to check out the other shows on thedigitallifestyle.com, such as The TDL Show and the recent podcast, the new podcast, The World of Windows, with Ed Bott and Mike Halsey. If you haven't listened to it, you should definitely give it a listen. Definitely check it out. Great discussion all about Windows. And when it comes to that subject, doesn't really get better than those two guys. So definitely check it out. All right, with that being said, I think I'm going to go ahead and call it a wrap. Please be sure to tune in next week and join us for show number 96. And until then, take care.